Smiley Vaughan and Nathan Shared Productions present Icons in Jazz. Johnny Griffin. Slightly built, but with a powerful sound, his nickname was Little Giant. He was the embodiment of swinging hard bop. He was a performer easily able to negotiate the tricky harmonic changes and swift tempos of modern music. He was one of the all-time great and very often fastest on his instrument, the tenor saxophonist Johnny Griffin. Everyone called me a racehorse, and Art Blakey once said to me, "You're shooting with your saxophone as if you were a machine gun." And I responded, "Yeah, man, but those blistering notes are hundreds of candy beads." That is the way Johnny Griffin described his music, and the singer Dee Bridgewater praised him. His playing reflected his personality, fresh and full of heart and soul. In Johnny, there always was this sparkling playfulness. His philosophy in life was always the one of eternal youth, and he lived it until the end. A true angel of jazz. Thank you. Introducing Johnny Griffin is the title of the then 28-year young, highly talented saxophonist's debut album for the Blue Note label, recorded in April 1956, introducing the blistering pace of his saxophone playing, backed by a superb rhythm section with Wynton Kelly, superb as Wynton Kelly can be, and with Curly Russell and Max Roach on bass and drums, respectively, gliding through the Griffin original, The Boy Next Door. John Arnold Griffin III was born on the 28th of April 1928, born in the south side of Chicago. His father, a steel worker who played the cornet at leisure time. His mother played piano in the local church. So it is no surprise that young Johnny learned to play the piano as a child, taking up the oboe and the alto saxophone when in high school under the instruction of Walter Dyett, who had also taught other powerful young saxophonists, including Gene Emmons and Von Freeman. An adolescent Griffin deeply impressed by the former when he heard him in the big band of King Kollax, and who inspired him to become a professional musician at the age of 17. And a good one too, hired by one of the most high-profile 1940s band leaders, by Lionel Hampton.
Thank you.
The mighty Lionel Hampton Orchestra in full flight there, recorded live in Paris at the Olympia, featuring the young and promising tenor saxophonist Johnny Griffin during the performance of The Rise. And it was Hampton who insisted that Griffin had to change from the alto to the tenor saxophone because he needed him for those sax battles with Arnett Kopp. Those battles very popular with the audience at that time. Griffin joined Hampton for 3 years, from 1947 to 1950, finally becoming tired of those showbiz competitions, and he left together with trumpeter Joe Morris to play what his native Chicago stands for, R&B and the blues. Together with Von Freeman, Griffin grew to one of the leading saxophonists in the Windy City. The only fact that would delay his solo career was a draft into the army. And when he was drafted, lucky circumstances and the fact that he was a well-known musician saved him from combat service in Korea. He was posted to Hawaii instead to play in a military band. After his service, he returned to Chicago and became immediately involved in the vibrant music scene and the illustrious circle of young pioneers of the hard bop style that orbited around drummer Art Blakey, who lured Griffin into the Big Apple, where he played and recorded with the Jazz Messengers, Thelonious Monk, and with others from the Blue Note stable, which led to the aforementioned debut album, followed by a second helping, the fabulous Chicago Calling. We'll be right back. Calling, a Johnny Griffin original written in honor of his native city, and it is also the title track of his second album as a leader for the Blue Note label. A seminal date that showcases the tenor saxophonist's speed, technique, and power. I love to play fast. Then I get hot and have to be careful to control myself. But when the rhythm section really gets going, I want to explode, Griffin once said. And there he was with bassist Curly Russell and drummer Max Roach, who also played with him during the sessions for his debut, introducing Johnny Griffin a few months earlier. With both albums in his luggage, Griffin reached national attention and big names were queuing up to hire him, and especially Art Blakey welcomed the little giant wholeheartedly into his band, because he represents exactly for what hard bop in general and Blakey's jazz messengers in particular stands, driving energy. Griffin was also part of the legendary Blowing Session for the Blue Note label that also included fella tenors John Coltrane and Hank Mobley, and he recorded as part of Thelonious Monk's quintet and sextet. All those recordings are highly recommended to explore because they showcase how huge the little giant was. But his most famous and popular teaming was with fellow saxophonist Eddie Lockjaw Davis, and both were known and loved as the Tough Tenors. Thank you. Two tough tenors of Johnny Griffin and Eddie Lockjaw Davis there, creating some fleshy, high-flying musical sparks with their extraordinary playing, turning a half a dozen pieces into an enticing mix of edgy solos and synchronized ensemble playing. Spurred on by the fabulous rhythm section of Junior Mans on the piano, Larry Gales on bass, and Ben Riley on the drums, kicking off the affair with a plump, with their soulful interpretation of Lester Young's Tickle Toe, with Griffin and Davis trading their tough leads, creating some amazing jazz that pleases saxophone fans and anyone who enjoyed classic 1960s hard bop. Between 1960 and 1962, Griffin worked in this popular and hard-nosed two-tenor bebop environment with fellow honker and bopper Eddie Lockjaw Davis, a Count Basie performer with a compatible affection for no-frills, rootsy, blues-driven music. Both were an attraction, and their tough tenor style of extended groove-tone solos and bantering counterpoint were well-received by the audience, critics, and punters during the 1960s. It was Thelonious Monk who enthusiastically encouraged Orrin Keepnews of the Riverside label to sign Johnny Griffin. What happened in the second attempt in 1960, after he had left Blue Note? And it seems that the label celebrated it with the release of their now classic Studio Jazz Party, where they teamed their new signing with a quintet of excellent musicians and put them in front of an invited and enthusiastic studio audience that provided the atmosphere. The band introduced by Bob Hipster Babs Gonzalez, who also invites you.
Watch it now, watch it, everybody. We're getting ready to roll. Quiet, please. All right, okay. Don't make me laugh. Crazy, watch it, everybody. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Babs Gonzalez. Welcome to Riverside Records Jazz Party. Voila, Griffin, allo. Thank you.
Voila, there you got it. The other, the soulful, the ballad side of Johnny Griffin playing his saxophone most emotionally and passionately during the Bill Carvey, Carl Fisher ballad, You've Changed, very much associated with Billie Holiday, taken on here by the tenor ace and supported by an excellent quintet with the underrated trumpeter Dave Burns and a rhythm section consisting of Norman Simmons on the piano, Vic Sproul's bass, and Ben Riley on the drums. Recorded in the Riverside Studio in September 1960 and released by the label under the title Studio Jazz Party. Everybody having great fun and is celebrating the signing of the new tenor star. And indeed, everyone was thrilled and optimistic at Riverside, and they were looking forward to produce and release more albums with Johnny Griffin in the lead, unsuspecting that the Studio Jazz Party would become a farewell party, because shortly after, Griffin left the United States for Europe. The breakup of his relationship, tax problems, and the decline of hard bop in favor of free jazz were the reasons to leave and to try his luck in Europe. And he would stay there for a good while. He moved to Paris in 1963, shifted between France, Holland, Belgium, and Germany, and worked with a variety of excellent European rhythm sections, sometimes in the company of expatriate American musicians, battling it out with tenor aces Dexter Gordon, Arnett Kopp, and others before he reached Cologne, the home of the best jazz orchestra on the European continent, co-led by Kenny Clarke and Francie Boland. And here he is, within this framework, taking on the first solo on this little ditty entitled Sax No End. You got 5 tenor saxophonists for the price of 1, gliding through the Boland composition and arrangement of Sax No End, based on the Changes of Chinatown, originally recorded by the big band for their 1967 album with the same name, featuring Griffin's brother in crime, Eddie Lockjaw Davis. But this recording was captured during a live performance on German television 1 year later, featuring those 5 tenors lined up to take their solos. First up, Johnny Griffin, followed by Tony Coe, Ronnie Scott, Sahib Shihab, and Derek Humble, playing as one at the end, clearly demonstrating that they are one of the best saxophone sections of any jazz orchestra ever. The Kenny Clarke Francie Boland Big Band ranked among the top European orchestras of the 60s and the early 70s. Co-chaired by the legendary Bob drummer Kenny Clarke and Belgian-born pianist-composer Francie Boland, the band was made up of musicians who worked in radio bands all over Europe. But during a certain time of the year, they met in Cologne to rehearse, to give concerts, and to record. And Johnny Griffin played a huge part within this environment, and he also became the first choice saxman for visiting U.S. musicians. Thank you. Gems Are Coming, probably Johnny Griffin's best-known composition, a blues he played in his concerts all over the globe, all through his life. And here you get an excerpt of a live performance in Cologne in 1973, where he stretches the tune to over 20 minutes. One of altogether four lengthy pieces the tenor saxophonist put into the can for an album aptly entitled Life in Cologne 1973, featuring a top-class quartet consisting of pianist Kenny Clark, bassist Albi Kulatz, and drummer Art Taylor. A live archive release that was only recently rediscovered in the vaults and is now remastered and re-released on CD. Griffin settled with his second wife in Rotterdam in 1973, still very much in demand and playing with a who is who in jazz all over Europe. After 15 years on the European continent, he returned to the United States in 1978 and immediately recorded a studio album for the Galaxy label entitled Return of the Griffin, demonstrating his home crowd that he is still at the peak of his power during this modern bop session. Griffin also visited his hometown Chicago, and particularly the Jazz Showcase, a club owned by his friend Joe Siegel. And whenever the exiled tenor ace returned, it was there where he ended up, always on the 24th of April, his birthday, which he shared with another tenor giant, the legendary Joe Henderson, and together they celebrated in Siegel's club. Here are some audio time documents, first Siegel and then Griffin.
He came out of the hard blowing school in Chicago that had that hard style, mixing the hard swing and soulful bebop. Johnny was 2 years younger than me. Joe Henderson, I'm not sure. But I remember once we got them together for a birthday celebration when we were at the Blackstone. Johnny blew him off the stage.
Chicago!
I'm a foreigner wherever I go. I really feel like that. I noticed this when I went back, because I go to Chicago every year now in April for my birthday party. But I think I'm fortunate that I like people. And I like living.
He is a foreigner away from home, and he felt like that. But he didn't like the style of playing in the United States and preferred to live in Europe for the rest of his life. And in 1980, Johnny Griffin and his wife moved from Rotterdam first to Nice and then to Montprévoix in the département de Vienne in France, expressing his attitude and the meaning of life and his music in his own words.
They teach you how to, you know, wait a minute. Take your time. Have a good glass of some good Bordeaux and relax. Taste this wine, taste that wine. Yeah, that says it pretty much the way I see it. To me, that's the basis of the magnetism that makes this music so accepted in all quarters of this planet, all places.
That's right. Feel good. Feel good. That's what this music is all about.
Yes, that's the way Johnny Griffin saw the meaning of his life and music. He once said, "Jazz is music made by and for people who have chosen to feel good in spite of conditions." Johnny Griffin died on the 25th of July 2008 at the age of 80. His music is thankfully with us as long as we are around. And here he is in the company of Joe Henderson, captured during a concert in Berlin in November 1987, gliding through the Cole Porter chestnut, What is the Thing Called Love? Accompanied by longtime friend and companion Kenny Clark on the piano, as well as Jimmy Wood on bass and Keith Kilgo on the drums. Oh,
Thank you.